You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we live wherever and however we damn well please, because we're humans, damn it. As we've noted over this season of our podcast, pointing out the privilege of their opponents has become a major tactic of social justice warriors over the past year, especially in relation to race. We're actually going to see this in our first news story here in a second. They're attempting to turn privilege into a legitimate concept in order to use it to cull more power. However, the term has no basis in reality. Let's take white privilege, for example, and use myself as a test case. Theoretically, culture should be set up to favor me, as my skin color is white, and thus I am accepted as part of the group that has been in and dominated this country since it was discovered, quote unquote. However, the basic genealogical study I did, and by study I mean a phone call to my father, demonstrates that the concept of white privilege ignores the long history of immigration in this country, making it as racist as the label Caucasian. You see my categories right here. My paternal grandfather was first generation Polish, went to trade school for high school, and worked a blue collar job his whole life. My paternal grandmother was bilingual in French and English and went to work at a textile mill at 14. My maternal grandmother stopped going to school after 8th grade to work in a factory. Finally, my maternal grandfather was first generation Italian and worked blue collar jobs his whole life, at one point operating, but not owning, 2 bowling alleys to make ends meet. The only reason I am even where I am today, beyond my hard work, is the hard work of my immigrant ancestors. I have no connections in the white collar, successful, rich and powerful, whatever you want to call it, beyond what I have cultivated myself. So I have to work just as hard as anyone to discover opportunities and get noticed in my chosen field. The concept of privilege is just another example of how dangerous collectivist thought is. Every person has his or her own story. Let them tell it themselves. Joining me this week via Skype from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards. I'm in shock, Daniel. Thanks to Clemson's big win over Florida State on Saturday, we are now chasing every football fan's dream. And if you heard the way I said Saturday, you can tell I was really talking about my blue-collar Massachusetts roots.
Saturday in the yard.
Yeah, I didn't even mean that.
It was a wicked game.
not the Patriots game. The Clemson game, though.
Oh, right, yes. Yeah, absolutely. Clemson going undefeated so far. Patriots going undefeated so far. If both of them make their respective championships, it will just be the most epic smackdown of all epic smackdowns in the football world.
It'll make me very poor because one's in Glendale, Arizona, which is about 6 hours for me, and the other is up near San Francisco, Santa Clara, which is about 8 hours for me. So I'm going to be poor.
I told my fiance that if the Patriots make the Super Bowl, there is a high likelihood that I'd want to go, and she got all excited. She was like, yeah, let's go. And then I said how much it was, and she was like, oh, fuck that. She's not going to stop me from going, but she's not going to go.
She doesn't understand. This is insane. I literally, Clemson, the second half of that game, they dominated in a way I've never seen them dominate before. I literally almost cried.
Plus, their coach's name is Dabo Sweeney, which and is I the greatest him. Coaching name of all time.
No, Bill Belichick is.
Nah, it's a good name, but Dabo Sweeney is a much better name.
But you can't say Sweeney your privileges.
Belichick. Yes.
Or premises, rather.
But you can't take Bill's name and make it into a really southern sort of Dabo Sweeney.
No, right? You know what I think of with Dabo Sweeney? I think of the gambling game they played at Quark's in Deep Space Nine. Whenever anyone won, they would just yell, Dabo!
Has anyone mocked up that meme yet?
No, because I'm probably the only person who's been on Clemson's campus who's thought of that. And if I tried to do that, they would have all thought I was weird.
Get on it, nerds everywhere who don't watch football or know who Dabo Sweeney is are counting on you. Wait a minute.
Also joining us, a return appearance via Skype from the multitude of strong trees, James Elias. Welcome back, James. I'll have you know that recently Daniel told the story on the podcast of you getting slapped by a punk ass in Las Vegas.
Did you include the part where, you know, I almost, you know, went to jail for stabbing him with that 6-inch knife I just happened to have at the time?
Except that we're also fucking dumbfounded that this was actually happening. That we just sat there in complete fear and terror.
Yeah,
like, and we're some driving, rodent.
We're driving away, and I just remember Justin saying, I can't believe it. James got slapped by a punk ass. I can't believe that was exactly your wording even that night. He was a designated punk ass. That was his, clearly, I guess it was just something about him where you're like, you know, as I'm getting slapped, you're doing nothing, but you're just kind of thinking like, huh, that guy's a punk ass. Like, that guy's definitely categorized as a punk ass.
And I'll maintain this is what I told Daniel when he told the story. He could have done anything, and what he does is he comes over, he opens the door, and he slaps you, and he runs away. That's what makes him a punk ass.
Right. I mean, I think what happened is he saw the knife and was like, okay, like, I'm not really gonna do this, but I don't want to look like a pussy, so I have to do something. So he, like, gave me sort of a half-hearted slap in the face. Like, it didn't even really hurt. I was mostly just shocked that, like, I was slapped in the face.
I think that's the most benevolent interpretation of what he did.
Yeah, it is.
I still think he was just a punk ass.
Meth head punk ass, by the way.
He was crazy, yeah.
I just love the girlfriend. Leonard, get back in.
Oh my god, yeah, she was in there screaming at him.
I don't know what his name was. I have no, I just sound like a
threw a milkshake at your truck, too.
Yes, indeed.
I've had worse thrown at my car. Worse has also happened to the University of Missouri president. Do you want to talk about that, Daniel?
Okay.
Let's do that in the news with Daniel T. Richards.
I have no transition because this headline is the best possible transition. The Washington Post reports, black grad student on hunger strike in Missouri after swastika drawn with human feces.
I thought you were going to go with the list of demands headline.
No. We'll get to that in a moment. I just wanted to get some context to this story. Yes, the University of Missouri president has resigned over racial tensions, but the backstory here is almost as bizarre as the actual resignation itself. So apparently,
by the way,
racism abounds. Oh, go ahead.
Can I just say, I think that drawing a swastika in poop is the equivalent of going up to somebody's door, opening it, slapping them, and running away.
Yeah, this is a sign.
The punk ass of racism.
Yeah, right? Yeah, the punk ass of racism.
This is a side of Mr. Hanke that I was not aware of.
Yeah.
And I do not approve. But apparently racism abounds in Missouri, where several racial incidents have happened over the past few months that have led to this hunger strike, protests, and then the demand of the resignation of the president. It all started out with not a human feces swastika, but another swastika being carved into a dorm, and it escalated from there into one student being called the N-word. And then another student being called the N-word.
How many people go to the University of Missouri?
It's quite a few thousand.
Is that a real number? Quite a few?
That's a number that I made up because you didn't ask me for this in show prep. those are the two incidents. And then another incident was a play was interrupted when someone in the auditorium screamed the N-word at the predominantly African-American cast. Or wait, we can say black now. I forgot about that. I forgot that African American is now racist. We can say black again. Hooray!
Wait, African American is racist now?
Oh yes, because it doesn't encompass all black culture.
Hey, that's my true argument, and it came back around, alright?
It's true. We did get hit with that African boomerang.
Yeah, that's Australia, Daniel.
They have boomerangs in Africa.
I'm sure.
Now when they finally agree with me that white is racist or Caucasian is racist or whatever, that's when we win.
So after these instances,
by the way, 35,441 in 2014 at University of Missouri.
Well, there you go.
I'm sure more than two people get called the N-word on a daily basis on that campus.
Yeah,
probably. But these are just highlighting how incredibly racist the campus culture is, according to most students. In fact, one student by the last name of Butler said, "I already feel like this campus is an unlivable space." This is the guy on the hunger strike. So it's worth sacrificing
maybe that's
something.
There's no food for you.
Yes. So it's worth sacrificing something of this grave amount because I'm already not wanted here. I'm already not treated like I'm a human. This guy was called a bad name. Yes, you are being treated like a human because humans treat each other like shit a lot of the time. Welcome to humanity.
Don't go on Twitter then.
Exactly. So this is my favorite one though. So the problems in Columbia, Missouri began on September 11th. Whoa. That's when Peyton Head, the Missouri Students Association president and an African American.
Wait, his name is Peyton Head?
His name is Peyton Head.
He sounds like a parody of Peyton Manning's forehead. Is his middle name Four? Peyton Forehead?
It could be. I'm not going to say it's not, because I don't have that information.
His parents named him as a parody of a football player.
You shall grow up to be the most successful parody of all time. So the Missouri, I'm sure his parents sound exactly like white people from the 30s.
Oh, I thought that you were trying to do Canadians from South Park.
Shut up, guy. I'm not your guy, buddy. So yes, he's the president of the Missouri Student Association, and he's an African American, points out. This is the quote from, this is what the article says. He was racially abused as he walked home. What do you think that means? Racially abused.
I thought they gave him a fruit basket with watermelon in it.
No, that would be outright abuse. That's basically the equivalent of being lynched.
James, that's a callback to an earlier episode.
Yeah, sorry, you're not in on all of our cool jokes.
That was also me explaining the joke.
Yes, very good. Right. Which is another thing we do here on the Midside.
Right, we always need to explain jokes to the fullest extent.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's funny because, I mean, you don't even need to explain a joke fully for the joke to still be funny. So that's what's so funny about it.
But why is that funny?
I mean, that's funny because I'm referencing the joke itself. And that's, you know, a self-referential thing kind of leads to an endless loop in absurdity, which is funny. So.
We will get to Alice in Wonderland and the rabbit hole later. Let's leave that. So back to racial abuse,
Head. Sounds like a really weird sex act. Alice in Wonderland and the rabbit hole.
Yes. Well, coming from talking about Mr. Head to down the rabbit hole. Was racially abused when he walked home. This is a quote from Mr. Head. Last night, as I walking through campus, I swear to God, this is what it says. This is the Washington fucking Post. Last night, as I walking through campus, some guys riding on the backs of a pickup truck decided that it would be okay to continuously scream N-dash-dash. What do you think that is?
I think it's really weird to scream N-dash-dash. I would just be like, did you just forget how to spell?
They turned around. It wanted to be offensive, but I mean, you know, I'm not a racist. I'm not going to say the word nigger. I mean, come on.
Oh, it's actually, I think they were just explaining the difference between an N-dash and an M-dash. N-dash!
I'm just going to go around calling people N-word.
N-word! That's what my friend does. My friend says, what's up, N-words? Like, yeah, just that's...
So, Head wrote on Facebook that he was really just wanted to know why his simple existence is such a threat to society. Okay.
Well, I have a suggestion as to why his simple existence might be a threat to society. See, we are pack creatures, so we're theoretically stronger in numbers. The only problem is, when the people in our pack are pussies, we're not strong in numbers.
That's misogynistic, but go ahead.
No, that was my entire point. This guy's a bitch.
Oh, yes, he is. He is a little bitch, yes. Most college students are. And I'm not saying African-American college students. I'm saying most, if not all, college students are little bitches.
Yeah, he's the guy who gets eaten by the zombie because he stubs his toe.
Right.
Or,
exactly.
Or he gets called. Somebody's like, "You're going slow. Go faster." And he's like, "You hurt my feelings." Oh, eaten.
He gets eaten by the zombie because he's too busy wondering why the women aren't shaving their armpits. So African American students
why they are
upset.
Shaving their armpits.
Whatever. African American students became upset when it took University Chancellor R. Bowen Lofton nearly a week. That's what this says, to respond to the incident.
By the way, that's fast in academic terms.
Also, what the fuck is he going to do? Everyone knows it's bad to call someone N-dash, okay?
Except apparently other N-dashes.
So he now so he needs to type out an email that says, "We don't condone the use of the word N-dash on campus." And, this
not,
is and it took him nearly a week.
Yale. If he works at Yale, he should never write emails to the N-dash students ever.
Yes, correct. So here we go. Fast forward to today, where the Missouri president resigned because of protests and eventually the horrible football team there saying that the black students were not going to play. And then the protesters issued a list of demands
to the
university.
So you mean the football players weren't going to play?
There was a white guy left. the kicker.
I was going to say they would have had the kicker, the slot receiver, and the punt returner.
Yes, exactly. And maybe the quarterback and the coach, but that's 50-50. So we wanted to particularly throw this out because the first demand here, is that Tim Wolf, the president who did resign, write a handwritten apology to the concerned students, demonstrators, and holds a press conference reading that letter. Quote, "In the letter and at the press conference, Tim Wolf must acknowledge his white male privilege, recognize that systems of oppression exist, and provide a verbal commitment to fulfilling concerned students' demands, the rest of which involves spending more money on diversity staff and social justice nonsense." So how about that? Resign, he must acknowledge his white privilege.
Like I told you, like I said in the opening, they're trying to legitimize the concept. And if this guy legitimizes it, says that, he legitimizes it.
Yeah.
Yeah. James, you were going to say that part you had a visceral reaction to?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, to me, I didn't think about it quite as hard as Justin did, but to me, when I saw
usually
this...
Usually true of most things that are a waste of time.
He must acknowledge his white male privilege. That came off to me as like, I don't know. It came off to me as though it's like, you know, prisoners in the Vietnam War, like they are, you know, somehow being forced to acknowledge something like, you know, the evil of America or some kind of thing that they're, it just read off as being like, okay, well, it doesn't matter what you think, Mr. President, Mr. University President, you must do this. You must, you know, he's being forced into it. It comes off very much like, you know, the way that a criminal behaves, basically. Like, oh, we're going to make this guy say this. And I had a very strong reaction to that. But that must be why, is like, if they can get a university president to acknowledge his white male privilege, then it further legitimizes the concept by making it part of the discussion among, you know, respected individuals like a university professor. Did he end up doing it? Did he end up acknowledging his – I know he resigned. Did he end up acknowledging – did he end up – I like this, a handwritten apology. Did he cave to every detail of this demand? Like, he's like – it's like, no, dude, like, I'll do everything you want, except I really want to type it. Like, I can't really handwrite anymore. Like, and
– exactly.
Who's handwritten? Typed it and put the note in a fruit basket with watermelon in it.
Right, with a feces swastika in front.
Exactly. Look, I'll tweet it, I'll Instagram it, I'll YouTube it, but I'm not fucking writing it.
He only puts it on Snapchat.
Yeah, we all get to look at it for 30 seconds.
I'll text it to you. I'll send a fucking carrier pigeon. Smoke signal, but I'm not writing it down. Screw you. No, I don't think as of yet he has acknowledged his white male privilege, but we are on white male privilege watch right now. There are reporters standing outside his house waiting for him to acknowledge his white male privilege.
James, so, what you're talking about is something that Daniel and I talked about over the weekend with this Yale controversy, where the dorm master or whatever was getting yelled at by students because he sent out an email saying students are free to wear the costumes, or his wife sent out an email saying they're free to wear the costumes they want for Halloween, but the costumes were racially insensitive, so black students were yelling at him. And they did the same thing to him, where they said, basically, if you disagree with us, you're not fit to be in your position. Who hired you? And then they told him he was a disgusting human being and didn't deserve to sleep at night. So it's the same way criminals behave, where they think they're in the right and they've been wrong. A certain segment of criminals behave. They think they're in the right and they've been wrong so much, and the only way to be righted, it's not a word, but we'll go with it, is to get the power back and take what they deserve.
Even if it's very totalitarian. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
No, go right ahead, James. Oh, please, okay. You are the guest here.
Well, thank you. This situation really reminds me of an incident very similar to this on the UCSD campus, University of California, San Diego.
I thought it was University of California, so dumb.
Yeah, right. Not to be confused with UCSB, which is the University of Casual Sex and Beer. and then UCLA, which is the University of Caucasians Lost Among Asians.
So, that's pretty good.
I didn't make up any of those.
I want to go to UCLA.
I went to the University of Spoiled Children, USC.
Ah, yes.
What's the real one people use for SD? Because it can't be my dumb one.
SD? University of...
You hesitated. It's mine now. University of California.
I don't remember.
You're so dumb.
So, yes, it's so dumb. So, anyway, at the University of Southern California, so dumb. there was a very similar incident to this where there were... Oh, I remember what it was even triggered by. There was this...
Please don't say the word trigger. It's triggering.
Well, that was an unintentional slip, but I was kind of thinking that same kind of thing. But so it was triggered by this party that one of the frats held called the Compton Cookout. And there was this comedian who appeared at the Compton Cookout called Jigaboo Jones. Do you remember this? He was
no.
He's a black comedian, and as his name might sort of reflect, he kind of has this message where he's like, guys, like, you know, let's cool it with the complaining about racism thing. So he intentionally chose a name that's, you know, controversial to say the least. So he hosts this, and he's very funny, and he tells a lot of, like, you know, jokes associated with the, you know, with black people, I guess. I didn't watch any of his performances, but he's at this Compton Cookout. They have this thing, and at the Compton Cookout, you're encouraged to dress ghetto style. Like, I'm not, you know, basketball shorts and stuff like that, I guess. And, you know, an icy grill, backwards baseball hat, you know, that sort of deal. And this
How
was
would
considered
a grill work if it was icy. That seems like a grill wouldn't work then.
Isn't that a thing though? You put like diamonds in your teeth and that is an icy grill.
Yeah. Don't make me explain the joke, please.
Why not? I love that. So anyway, they do this freaking cookout, and you know, the black people on campus are not, well, clearly not all of them, but you know, basically the people who want to profit off of this kind of racial tension, the people who are part of these so-called civil rights activist groups or social justice activist groups, they raised a big fuss. They demanded that, you know, these fraternities be disciplined. Again, I think the university administration didn't get around to dealing with it quick enough, because obviously, you know, they have bigger shit to deal with than this. Later that week,
a lynch mob.
I'm impressed with that reference, Daniel.
Thank you.
Daniel referenced a rap song, everyone.
Yes. Thank you.
So they in one of the school libraries, they found what's the not called for lynching? A
effigy?
No, it was like a no. What? It was just someone found a piece of rope tied like a lynching.
A noose?
A noose, right.
You can't say the word like a noose.
Yeah, I didn't know that word. Okay, gee, I couldn't remember the word. So
that's not the
end of my balls for everything. Am I going to get through the freaking story? So they found this noose there.
This week's podcast is James telling a story.
So they found this noose, and that was considered racist. Somehow, like, and so that got people even more up in arms, but really it was just randomly found somewhere in one of the libraries. And it turns out that this girl just kind of like made a noose just cause she could, like, it was apparently just a coincidence. And like weeks later, the girl came out and said, okay, it was me. I'm so sorry I did it. She was so genuinely like distraught that she had like, at least she thought she had caused so much like eruption of more racial tension over this. They wanted the president to resign. They made similar list of demands to this. They wanted the president to resign. She eventually did. It was such a loss for common sense and reason. Basically.
Wow. Because black people were the only people who were ever hanged in America. We never hanged criminals.
Never. Not once.
Never. Only nope. If they were black.
Right? All white criminals get a hearty handshake, pat on the back, and a $10 bill. That's right.
And well, a little card that says white privilege on it.
Exactly.
Wait.
It gets them into all the clubs.
So if I commit a crime, I get free dinner?
Yeah. And for you, that's like three dinners, because you're eating at Del Taco.
Yeah. That's three like, Tuesdays at Del Taco.
At Del Taco, I think one taco is -$0.06. They literally hand you a taco and a nickel and a penny, and they're like, here, we're sorry.
Still better than Taco Bell.
You know who else is sorry? Starbucks. Because apparently Christians this week are saying something along the following. They're saying a red Starbucks cup is cheap and disposable, and in 14 years they are decomposable. And unlike my home, they are not foreclosable. Howard Schultz can kiss my ass. Woo!
Did you write that?
Or something like that. No, that is the song Red Solo Cup by Toby Keith, but I appropriated it for Red Starbucks Cup because I am hip and with it. That's what the Christians are saying, apparently, because they think red Starbucks cups, just plain red with Starbucks logo, are anti-Jesus. At least that's what Joshua Firstein, sounds like a Jewish name. What is he doing on here? Said in a viral video.
It's a conspiracy to make Christians look bad by pretending that Christians are mad about this when they're not.
Yes, he said to Jews have to control everything now, including the internet. He said,
yes.
Quote, I think in the age of political correctness, we become so open-minded, our brains have literally fallen out of our head. Starbucks removed Christmas from their cups because they hate Jesus. Do you realize that Starbucks wanted to take Christ and Christmas off of their brand new cups? That's why they're just plain red. So what say you? Does Starbucks hate the Lord Christ, our Savior, the King of Kings, the Prince of Princes? Or do they just wanted to save money on ink?
Now, I don't drink coffee or go to Starbucks, so Daniel, tell me about this. When have they ever had Jesus on their cups?
Never Jesus. Was no little baby in a manger. No long-haired white guy being crucified.
Jesus was always, not white. That's racist.
I know. Always just that you had sort of general cheer on their cups. It would say Merry Christmas. There would be ornaments or reindeer or whatever, tchotchkes that looked ridiculous. So, I think the red cup is classic looking. It's bold. People notice it. And right. It's fucking red.
It's red. And what color is their logo?
Green.
So what is this associated with?
Red and green. Mrs. Grouch on her period.
Oh, my God.
I was going to say M&Ms, but close.
Oh. I don't know. What are you
That's
thinking?
Basically the same thing.
I have no possible reference to what you're talking about. So what are you?
Red and green is Christmas.
Oh, right. It's fucking Christmas. Everyone knows that. Yes. Yes. It's just ridiculous. So I don't think they're being anti-Christian any more than I think when they have their white cups, they're being anti-black. It's a fucking cup. It's a color. It saves them a shit ton of money if they make it a solid color for printing. They print a billion of these fucking cups every year. Get over it! But the one thing I want to say about this is that despite the fact that this video went viral, I think what went viral about this story is people bashing Christians. Now, I'm not a Christian, and I don't want to defend Christians. Christians can defend themselves or go fuck themselves. I don't care. But I think our reaction, our wanting to be upset about something stupid was what drove this story, not the actual video or message itself. So that's my 97 cents or whatever it is.
94 cents.
That's the valuation of his comment.
Well, because the rest is for tacos.
It's certainly not my 50 cent.
I find it really interesting that there is now an entire industry around basically presenting outrage to people. Like, you know, basically I'm thinking of Upworthy, and then there's several, you know, that's for liberals, and then there's several clones of Upworthy, and then there's several clones of, like, Christian, or rather right-wing versions of that.
Oh, like Twitchy.
Are you guys actually naming specific sites? Because I thought this was just the internet.
Right, yeah. It turns out that, you know, the internet's about 70% porn, then 29%, you know, outrage porn, which is what we call this, is outrage porn. Because, like, it's like, oh, I'm going to scroll through my newsfeed. Here's some stories that fulfill my need to be outraged. Like, I can go on the internet and fulfill, you know, my sexual fantasies or fulfill my rage fantasies. Just like, ah, those fucking liberals, like, they're destroying Christmas with their damn commie Starbucks cups, you know.
Well, isn't that what ESPN did? Isn't ESPN just outrage porn for people winning?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. If you're at it all successful, they're going to make an excuse for why you should be hated.
Maybe it's winning porn.
Yeah. No, you're right. It's if I see another
values porn, it's just like, you know, I'm eating Atlas Shrugged and I'm just like, ah, yes, my values come to life before me.
James's hand going furiously. Wow.
It's supposed
everything
to be the invisible
is something
hand.
Porn.
The invisible hand, Daniel.
Thank you. Everything is something porn. That's a theory right there. Yes, the invisible hand is jerking me off when I read Atlas
James,
Shrugged.
You can get a PhD in sociology now, or anthropology. No, sociology.
Yes. Yeah, if I see one more goddamn story titled, "You Won't Believe Whatever."
Yes, that's the tagline on it. My friend Jeremy and I, what we do is we'll trade our phones, and then we'll look through each other's Facebook feeds, and whenever we see a picture, like, we have to caption the picture as though it were from Upworthy. So,
let's do this right now. Everybody pick a picture from your newsfeed.
Oh, God. We are literally going to Facebook right now.
Yeah.
Computers. Oh, I got a picture.
Well, the example my friend gave is he found a picture of one of my friends from grad school, and it's this Asian guy. And my friend Jeremy says, like, transgender Chinese boy, like, comes out to his parents. You won't believe what they said. And I'm like, that's just my friend from grad school. Like, and he just made this whole Upworthy title about just a picture of him.
I've got mine. You okay. Won't believe what white privileged douchebag they're allowing to record a podcast this week. and it is, in fact, a picture of James and Daniel on Justin's newsfeed about to record a podcast.
So, douchebag.
Yes. That's fun. That could be a weekly game.
I can't do that.
But, yeah. So how long before millennials are just so addicted to this outrage porn that when they're actually fucking a woman, they're going to make her tell them what she's outraged about,
or what
they won't believe.
Yes,
right. Just tell me what I won't believe.
So much right now.
Tell me what I won't believe. Yeah. Anyway,
Was that a penis-sized joke?
Maybe. You won't believe.
Okay, I hope it was, because
that
was right
one
there.
Of the biggest solar plants in the world in Nevada actually burns a shit ton of natural gas, making it a greenhouse gas emitter under state law. Or maybe you will if you're not an idiot. A solar plant at the center of the Obama administration's push to reduce, basically, America's carbon footprint has its own carbon pollution problem. The administration's initiative, which uses millions of taxpayer dollars to promote green energy, has been a boon for the Ivanpah plant in the Mojave Desert. This is the one that fries birds when they fly overhead.
That's right.
Yes, but it's sponsored by KFC. But Ivanpah uses natural gas as a supplementary fuel, and data from the California Energy Commission shows the plant burned enough of it in 2014, its first year of operation, to emit more than 46,000 metric tons of carbon dioxide. Put that in context, that's two times the pollution threshold at which power plants and factories in California are required to participate in the state's cap and trade program. So you have this shitty plant out in the middle of nowhere that's killing birds and producing nothing, and that's super fucking expensive. And by the way, just for the hell of it, it's burning two times the amount of natural gas that a regular power plant would be allowed to be emitted into the atmosphere.
Wait,
so
really?
Congratulations.
Well, no, it didn't say it was burning twice as much natural gas. It's producing twice as much of the CO2 that is.
Yes. Carbon dioxide.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So congratulations, Obama. You have definitely reduced this one.
You know, it's interesting. I actually used to land sail out by where this power plant now exists. It's out by a dry lake bed. And land sailing is a thing. It's like basically a three-wheeled go-kart with a sail on it. And you can go really – you can go like 60 miles an hour just by being pushed by the wind.
That sounds so fucking white. That is the whitest thing I've heard today.
So, yeah, I was using my white privilege out on that, dry lake bed. And, they wanted to build this thing, but it turns out these fucking turtles live out there. And so for a really long time, this solar power plant got blocked because of turtles. And Arnold Schwarzenegger said something along the lines of, like, if I can't even build a solar fucking power plant, like, what are we supposed to do? Like, there's all these grayouts happening in California, and we're not going to do anything about it, basically.
I want to call them Governor Brownouts.
Well, you know why they called them grayouts is because of Gray Davis, but now we have brownouts, yeah.
Hilarious.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
Yeah, it's funny because it's his name is the same as the term for when you kind of have a blackout.
That's funny because you explained it.
Reboob and re-pie hole.
Oh my god.
Justin's been silent for 4 minutes and we now know why. He's been furiously scribbling.
I had to come up with that.
Yes. Rebunghole? No. Re-pie hole! Got it. So.
I'm gonna make that the episode tag just to piss you off.
Did they have to wait for the turtles to physically move? Were they like standing there going, come on! They want to build a plant!
Which is funny because this was a joke in the recent episode of Fresh Off the Boat. Where they kept going back to the reporter in the drive-thru line because the drive-thru was stuck because they were waiting for the turtle to go away.
Exactly, and then eventually another turtle showed up.
Oh yeah. My god.
Yes.
Yes.
That was awesome. So yeah, Greens being hypocritical. Are we surprised by this? I don't think we are. But what we might be surprised by in the world of energy.
Reboob and re-pie hole.
Yes. Is that now if you tell a quote unquote lie about climate change, you can be put in prison or fined a lot of money. At least that's the goal of New York Attorney General, who's begun investigating ExxonMobil to determine whether the company has lied to the public about the risks of climate change or to investors about how such risks might hurt the oil business. Yes, the investigation focuses on whether statements the company made to investors about climate risks as recently as this year were consistent with the company's own long-running scientific research. This sets an incredibly dangerous precedent. We're going to now prosecute people for differing opinions about something that is still being debated in the scientific community. Didn't they try this in Italy where they sentenced those Italian scientists to prison for not predicting an earthquake? How did that work out?
Didn't they try this in World War II when they committed genocide against the Jews and everyone else?
It's almost the same. You know, I was thinking that, and then I thought, should I really reductio ad Hitlerum this? And
yes.
Then Justin did it.
Yes, you should.
So
usually, if Justin did something, the answer is yes, you should have done it.
Oh, yes. The Exxon inquiry might expand further to encompass other oil companies, according to the people with knowledge of the case. Though no additional subpoenas have been issued, to date, lawsuits trying to hold fuel companies accountable for damage they are causing to the climate have failed in courts, but most of those have been pursued by private plaintiffs. This is a state attorney general, and he's doing it under something called the Martin Act, a New York state law, which confers an attorney general broad powers to investigate, are you ready for this, financial fraud.
Well, yeah, the justification behind this is that, well, they actually use similar ideas to this against tobacco companies, because tobacco companies had actually done research that found that their product was harmful, and then they intentionally kept that knowledge away from the public and then waged an advertising campaign that, you know, to the contrary of their findings. And so the idea is that that is fraud. I don't know about financial fraud, but they're trying to make a similar argument here.
Basically. Oh, they absolutely are. And the marketing of this has been exactly that. This is, you know, tobacco all over again. It's the big tobacco playbook, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Fractivists. This is their porn, by the way, anti-fracking activists. They are just sitting at home, just wailing away on themselves, reading this nonsense. But I would like to actually have that same argument that tobacco companies had, because when you're talking about cost benefit, I mean, let's put Alex Epstein up on the stand and talk about the fucking benefits of oil versus the, you know, 0.5 degree rise in global average temperature over 100 years versus a 20-year rise in human lifespan, poverty below 10%, the most clean, prosperous, wealthy, healthy human environment in history. I'll take that trade any fucking day of the week in spades.
Yeah, I mean, I get sick of talking about this because it's what you just said about the 0.3 in 100 years. If you look at the fucking chart of when they've been keeping track of the global temperature, they don't have enough data to demonstrate there's any sort of significance going on. So who's the ones that's lying?
Yeah.
I mean, well, you can tell that this ends up just being the what ends up happening is you can see by the tactics being used that this is clearly an argument from intimidation, basically. They basically, without having to establish any science, they have moved the conversation into a matter of, well, the facts are settled. If you're against this, you are committing some kind of moral sin. You are a denier. We're just not even going to talk to you. They're trying to, you know, sort of preemptively remove the opposition from the debate, which, you know, I think there are certain, you know, sides of certain opinion, certain beliefs that should be spurned from a debate, you know, like people who are still racists, for example, still actual racists, you know, their opinions or creationists, you know, I think it was a mistake, for example, for Bill Nye to debate Ken Ham, the creationist. And so there are certain people you will remove from the debate, but they're trying to do that preemptively before the science, when the science is still really in its infancy.
Yeah, no, I mean, not just its infancy, but we are getting contradictory reports all the time, and not from fucking, you know, they always want to say all these contradictory reports come from the big tobacco, whatever. They absolutely unequivocally do not. If you read any fucking real journal about this, people legitimately have differing opinions about what causes warming or if we are actually causing warming at all. It is not a matter of, you're just a denier or you just hate environmental politics or whatever nonsense it is. People have legitimate differing opinions on the science, including, by the way, a growing school of people who think that warming would be the best fucking thing ever for the planet and would have so many benefits that we should try to warm the planet. More.
Geoform the Earth.
Exactly.
Or terraform the Earth, rather.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
Let's get that world engine, Zod. That's the true tragedy of Men of Steel. Not that he killed Zod, that he stopped the world engine.
That's damn right. So yeah, that's,
One thing I'll say is, as I have a master's in physics, and I've done one thing that I've studied extensively is the history of, especially Newton's discoveries, how he went from one discovery to another, there's always a logical link between his theories. He understands circular motion. He uses that understanding to understand the motion of the planets and how that relates to gravity. He uses that understanding to understand how objects fall here on Earth. Everything's connected. Everything, that is what certain science looks like. And when I read these, I'm not an expert when it comes to, I have a master's in physics, but I'm not an authority on climate science at all. But when I see the claims being made by the climate science community, it reads as a science in its infancy. It's nowhere near the point where we can make definitive conclusions based on a theory as we can in mechanics, Newtonian mechanics.
Oh my God, absolutely. And to expand on one point, when you say you're not an expert in climate science, you know how many people are fucking experts in climate science? Not that many.
Yeah.
You have
a lot of climate
scientists now, but if, like, Richard Lindzen makes this point because he's been a climate scientist for a while, which is when you go back to like 1990 or even 1995, like the number of actual climate scientists in the world was maybe in the high 90s. Like 90 something climate scientists, and now it's thousands and thousands. Why did was there that much interest and that much complexity in it? Of course there is, but no, it's where all the fucking money is. So everyone in the world calls themselves a goddamn climate scientist now when they know nothing about the field.
You mean
so
sort of like everyone online calling themselves some sort of expert in something to be talking about social justice?
Yes, absolutely. And by
the
way, completely.
Only...
Go ahead, James.
The only requisite for that is you have to just not have white male privilege.
Yes, indeed. It's a complete tangential side note for James. David Goyer, TV writer, awesome guy, in an interview recently revealed that there was going to be a new movie about Newton and partially what he did after he had a mental breakdown, which was almost as fucking amazing as what he did when through his actual science. So,
and it will be awesome because Goyer celebrates logic, rationality, and achievement.
As yeah, it's not
the
about...
way he treats Da Vinci and Da Vinci's demons.
Right.
It's going to be similarly awesome.
Yeah, it's not about him deteriorating as a human because he had a mental breakdown. It's about how he dealt with it and made himself even better and did something friggin' amazing in that time period that people don't recognize.
So everyone will hate it.
Yes, indeed, because it will not be as disgusting as something George R. R. Martin would write.
Right, and that's because it's not romantic. But we can hold out hope. That means it's time for The Hopeful Romantic with JML. Quick thing to start here. There's something that's been getting advertised a lot in my news feed and on Hulu, maybe. I don't know. I keep seeing it being advertised all over the place.
You wouldn't see it on Hulu since we now share a ads-free Hulu account.
And again, not being paid by that, but I will plug them. Hulu Plus ads-free changed my life.
Greatest thing ever.
I can watch an hour-long show in 40 minutes now. Amazing. Half-hour sitcom, 22 minutes. Best thing ever. Saves me so much time every day. But let's talk about their competitor Netflix for a second. I've been seeing this Aziz Ansari show advertised all over the place, Master of None, and I guess it just premiered.
Yeah.
I don't know if I should watch it or not. I don't want to watch it because this is my Aziz Ansari impersonation. Hey, you guys know when you try to hit on a girl and it's really weird and you have anxiety?
That's the joke.
That's every one of his jokes.
So that has to be, you know, when you hear girls and anxiety and it's really nasally?
Yeah. That's it.
Oh my
that's,
god.
That's every joke he has.
That's the entire show, by the way.
Is it?
Yeah. So I've watched the first two episodes because I was curious. The first episode is horrible. Horrible. In fact, I was literally looking at my watch going, is it over yet? It was that bad.
Did you at least get to get it over with in 22 minutes?
No, because it's a 40-minute fucking show.
Oh, it's 40 minutes. I'm never watching this bullshit.
The first episode is 40 minutes. The first episode was, for some reason. It was like a double episode. It is half hour after that. But,
oh, okay.
But
it's being marketed as like this brilliant thing. And there have been reviews that say it's brilliant.
I will share the opening scene with you, which basically is perhaps this is a good writing, but it's basically a picture of the entire show, which is Aziz and a girl he just met the night are having sex. And
does this happen? Can I ask a question? Does that happen in real life? Like, are there people out there that this is happening too frequently? I am beginning to believe this is one of these cultural myths that doesn't really exist.
I think people are having sex. Yes, Justin.
No, I mean people. I mean with people they just met. But yes, I know people have sex. Believe me, I walk into the dollar store and I see all those people in the 99-cent store, and I go, somebody's fucking all of these people.
That's a great thought. Yeah.
And I don't mean at once. There's not somebody who just comes along. He's like, fuck, fuck, fuck.
Yeah,
fuck.
The government. Oh, libertarian zinger for our liberty.me listeners. Okay. God, I feel ashamed of that. So it's like a first date. Like, they didn't literally just meet. Like, it's the end of a date, but you get to that later. But the point is, they're having sex. It's a little bit awkward, and then the condom breaks. And then they proceed to have a conversation about whether or not she should go get the morning after pill because he didn't ejaculate. But can you get pregnant from pre-cum? And they have this long debate about it. And eventually they decide to go. And the pharmacist is really awkward with them. And then he takes her home. But there's like a debate about whether or not he should call an Uber or try to get a taxi. And that's basically the entire show in a nutshell. It's these sort of awkward millennial situations that result in really terribly stupid conversations. And then they both go look at their phone for a while. And then it's resolved in a terribly awkward way.
So it sounds like millennial Seinfeld.
That's actually a fantastic description, except that Seinfeld is in some places funny.
Yeah, no, I wasn't saying. I mean, that's why I said millennial, because millennials aren't funny.
Yeah, so the problem with the
really
show.
I really resent the use of the word millennial at all. Could we just never say that word ever?
I'm sorry, James. We are millennials.
Oh, no, fuck. We're not. I don't know even. No, we're not. I don't even know what I think about it.
I don't know
it.
Where
I know
the cutoff
I'm not a millennial.
Is. Because every year I hear that the definition of millennial is someone who is 18 to 30. But it's like I've heard that definition for 5 years. So, anyway, but what was I going to say? Oh, so the one thing I'll say about the show is it is trying to do the Scrubs thing where it's part sentimental and part really awkward, funny comedy without the quirky flashback nonsense. But I hate that. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it with a passion.
Yeah, I hate
Be
it. I hate
a comedy. Be a fucking comedy.
First of all, fuck both of you. Scrubs is brilliant.
Nope.
But the reason Scrubs worked is it was romantic. It had a theme each episode that it wrote around. My hunch is that this show is extremely naturalistic.
So the second episode was a marked improvement, which is why I'll probably watch at least one or two more. It was about Aziz and his first-generation Chinese friend learning about what their fathers had to go through to get to America.
Hey, I can approve of that message. Sounds sounds like somebody's opening monologue.
Exactly. And it was about
Aziz. No, because white people don't go through that, you know.
Of course. Absolutely. And it was about Aziz and his friend having to be humbled because they were spoiled little millennial brats and their fathers had to go through hell to get them here. And so when your dad says, please fucking fix my iPad, you just sort of do it and you don't go, but dad, I have to go see X-Men. I don't want to miss the credit or the previews. Man, you know what he reminded me of, maybe? Yeah. He's sort of like a terrible Cartman.
How old is he supposed to be in this show?
He's like in his 30s.
So why aren't you moved the fuck out so you don't have to deal with this shit from your parents?
He is. He's moved out, but he still sees his parents because they live in the same whatever. But if you like sort of awkward comedies, or you like the drama comedy mixture, or you like Aziz Ansari's nasally drone, it's probably for you.
If you like identifying funny situations but not pointing out why they're funny or creating a punchline.
Exactly. It's probably
for
you.
Who the fuck likes awkward awkward moments in comedies? I hate the
Whoever
shit out of...
Whoever made Ben Stiller's career is who likes it. I cannot stand it. But
yeah,
that's...
there's parts of that in Meet the Parents. I liked Meet the Parents, but not the awkward parts. Like, fuck that. Like,
I was the one person in America who did not like Something About Mary. Because it was so awkward.
Yeah, I won't see a movie where the jokes are a dude's balls get stuck in a zipper and a woman puts cum in her hair and doesn't realize it's cum. I just won't see it on principle. No matter how much it makes fun of Brett Favre, I won't see
not
it.
Not pragmatically, but on principle.
Yep.
Yep. Okay.
Not just because it's inconvenient to go out and see it.
Right. Not because the DVD is $3.99. But on principle. All right, let's move along here. Because Aziz, way too much time on Aziz.
You're the one who kept talking. I was just letting it go because it was funny. There were
a couple trailers
this week that I want to know if you guys saw. I saw both of them because, like, anytime a trailer pops up, it's like, Facebook, recent news, trailers.
I might as well watch it. It's already playing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So the two trailers this week are Hateful Eight, the new movie by Quentin Tarantino, and then also Alice Through the Looking Glass, which is the sequel to Tim Burton's Alice, whatever that movie was called, except he's not directing this one. He's just producing it.
Oh. Weird.
So what did you guys think about these trailers? Did you even watch them? Because I watched them.
Yeah, I watched them.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think I'll let James go first. I've been talking too much.
So yeah, Hateful Eight. Oh, that looked badass. I'm definitely seeing that.
Alright.
Yeah. Not much to be said. So yeah, it's this cowboy movie set in the winter about these eight bounty hunters, and they all look just like incredible badasses. And I just really dig like the Western theme in the winter, like that. It looks amazing. It looks really cool. I'm sure Quentin Tarantino will figure out a way to screw it up. Like, it'll probably be at the end. Like, I'll love one of the characters, and I'll be like, yes! And then the main character will just suddenly shoot himself in the face for no reason. Like, that's probably what will happen.
I think we've gotten to the point where Quentin Tarantino will just walk out at the end, point at you, and go, you're a racist. And then walk off the screen. That'll be the end of the movie. I don't get it. I mean, I understand the concept of badass Western in the winter, and I'm excited for that, and I think Faiza had the same reaction, like, oh, it sounds fucking awesome. And you watch the trailer and you're going, all right, where's the awesome part? It's over. There was nothing.
Isn't that most Tarantino movies where like
nothing interesting happened?
There's one really awesome part, and then the rest of it is just like there's a really long scene where people talk a lot and you're like, why is this scene still going?
I mean, clearly.
He completely and utterly peaked in the first 8 minutes of Inglourious Basterds. Like, if he had just released the first 8 minutes and said, like, dropped the fucking camera and been like, I'm out, peace. Like, I he would have had a fucking phenomenal career, in my
opinion. That was the really long scene I was referring to, when they're in the bar, and that scene just keeps going.
Oh,
Say, Justin, clearly you didn't understand the tension being built up in that scene.
Not the bar.
I was bored.
Christoph Waltz in the house looking for the Jews.
No, I liked that one.
Yeah, he's talking about a different scene.
Yeah, I'm talking about later in the movie. It's like a half an hour long scene where they're just like talking in a bar the whole time. And I'm like, end this scene! God!
Oh, but he's trying to verbally manipulate his way into not being found out.
No,
like,
I get it.
Tense.
I understood.
Cut
13 minutes of it and it's a great scene.
This is like Kill Bill. If Kill Bill had just been David Carradine giving the Superman speech, amazing. Rest of it, just her killing people. And I have a feeling this movie is just going to be Channing Tatum doing something awesome and me being like, okay, I would have paid $13 for that, but not the rest.
What yeah, I'm worried about happening is it being like Django Unchained, where I did find it really interesting, and I really like the dentist character. And then at the very end, the dentist, spoiler alert, by the way.
There's walkers in the barn and Lori's pregnant.
The dentist guy, he's just like, oh, hey, why don't I do something that's completely out of character, really stupid, and will get myself killed? All right, yeah, nice. And then when I get shot, I'll, you know, fly away due to the, you know, law of conservation of momentum be gone spell.
Well, yeah. Was the dentist white?
It was because of his privilege, wasn't it?
Just a guess. I won't see any movie with Jamie Foxx in it.
You never saw Django?
No.
Jamie Foxx is it.
Did you just not hear my principle?
I mean, it was not pragmatic. Just don't watch the last 13 minutes of it. Just have a guy come on stage and like, okay, they killed Leonardo DiCaprio and they left. Like the end. Like, and just cut the last 13 minutes and just have someone saying
what's
that.
The point where Jamie Foxx isn't in it?
Where he isn't in it?
Can I watch the Foxless scenes, please?
Yes.
They should have super cuts for Justin of just all the scenes and all the movies Jamie Foxx is in without Jamie Foxx.
Yeah, I might have seen The Amazing Spider-Man 2 if Jamie Foxx wasn't in it.
Sort of like Garfield without Garfield.
Those are really funny. Yeah. What? Why are you against Jamie Foxx?
I don't think he's talented. I do not enjoy watching him.
I liked him in Collateral.
I liked him in Living Color.
I liked him in McDonald's.
That's right, he did do McDonald's. That's funny. Okay, Alice won. Saw it. Still baffled by why people think this is interesting. Understand, Justin will watch it because it has to do with time travel.
Yeah, I wasn't going to watch it. And then it was like, you have to battle time. And I was like, I'm in. And then it was Borat. And I was like, I'm kind of in.
Yes, Borat. Is Mr. Time or whatever his name is.
It seems kind of like the year without Santa Claus, where they like personify these characters for children, and you're like, this could be cool.
Probably not.
Yeah, I watched the preview, and it looked. I mean, it's not my kind of movie, but it looked like, oh hey, you know, like a lot of cool colors and effects, and like, you know, whimsical little characters and stuff. And then at the end, there's some kind of like. You know, like a music box with someone getting their head chopped off, and then the woman like laughs at it. I'm like, oh yeah, but Tim Burton made this, so I'm never gonna watch it.
She's the Queen of Hearts, and he gave her a thing of someone getting his head cut off.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. I saw the preview, but like the way
you
she
like how
laughed
our roles
at
have
it.
Reversed.
Yes,
it's the sort of thing. You know what I actually liked was the movie Maleficent. Like, I thought that was, like, pretty good.
Do you like Lesbian Avatar?
Yeah.
Still the greatest description of any movie in the history of time.
Maybe I was just psyched that, like, I could watch a movie with my girlfriend at the time that, like, we both actually liked. I was like, okay, nice. Like, I'm not just taking her to see some, you know, war movie that she's gonna hate. Like, I was just psyched, like, okay, like, this is... fine.
Not how I thought that sentence was gonna go. I thought it was like, I'm not going to a romantic comedy.
Yeah, I will never go to a romantic comedy. Like, so when she said, you know, Maleficent, like, okay, it's about a witch or something, fine. That's fine.
I don't.
So I was pleasantly surprised. Even though later everyone ruined it for me by saying, like, oh, it's about, you know, how all men are rapists and stuff. I'm like, oh shit, like, I kind of see how it was going that way.
Lesbian Avatar.
Lesbian Avatar.
All right.
Yeah. Let's move on to TV. So some TV news here. Did you guys see that the Muppet showrunner is leaving? They haven't replaced him yet. But I want to know if you guys think this is good news for the series, bad news for the series, or if the series is screwed anyway.
So the series is basically terrible. I really, really want to like it because I like the Muppets and I watch it every single week thinking this is the week it turns around. This is the week they have a coherent story. But no, none of that has happened. I find some of the jokes amusing, but other than that, it's very, it's like watching a terrible documentary. Like, you're just watching things happen to people, and that's boring.
Do you think the new showrunner can turn it around?
Anything is good at this point, I think. I don't know, they're going to bring in J.J. Abrams. That'd be fucking awesome.
Time travel.
Lance Flares. Yes.
No, I enjoy some of the stuff. Like
he reboots it. They go back and meet their younger selves.
Look exactly the same.
Muppet Babies crossover. Muppets.
Yes, Muppet Babies crossover. Okay, now I'm psyched.
Oh my god.
No, I enjoy like the new IT character they created. He's funny. They created the new Muppet. You know who I'm talking about?
Yeah, the one who doesn't blink. He's fine.
I enjoyed Scooter in the recent episode where he always goes to Color Me Mine.
It was alright, I guess.
And they basically made him Wallowitz from Big Bang Theory.
Yeah. But they're all sub-characters who are sort of quasi-funny and interesting. The main characters are shallow and boring. So, I don't know. Wow. It's the Muppets, I should love it, but...
I know, and the bigger problem may be that Bill Prady is in charge of this show. Speaking of people who are in charge of things that are causing bigger problems, we have further confirmation that Game of Thrones is naturalistic. So, at a recent presentation at the Northwestern School of Journalism...
Where I almost went, by the way, except that they told me that I needed to abandon my belief in objectivity in journalism.
Which makes George R.R. Martin's comments right now that I'm about to quote make perfect sense. This is what he said about the end of Game of Thrones. We all yearn for happy endings in a sense. Myself, I'm attracted to the bittersweet ending. Okay, that's fine, right? Abstractly, conceptually, that's fine, right? I don't think any of us disagree with that. That you can have happy or bittersweet endings. That's not the issue, right?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure, yeah. I'm wondering what you do have issue with him, actually. Mm-hmm. So yeah, go on.
Wait for it. People ask me how Game of Thrones is going to end, and I'm not going to tell them, but I always say to expect something bittersweet in the end. Now, here's the problem. Here's his definition of bittersweet. I think Tolkien did this brilliantly. I didn't understand that when I was a kid, when I read Return of the King, you can't just fulfill a quest and then pretend life is perfect. Life doesn't work that way.
Mm.
What he's smuggling in here is a premise of naturalism about a lack of resolution. It's not about everything being perfect at the end, but it's about having your conflict be resolved or intentionally showing that it's not resolved at the end. What he wants here is to have a conflict, have everyone fight over it, and then have no end and no resolution at the end of it.
Yeah.
And therefore no point to the story.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, this is why I like the show more than the books, is because the books, he, in order to be quote-unquote realistic... I mean, I guess this is realistic. You know, he has, okay, spoiler alert for the book here.
There's walkers in the barn and Lori's pregnant.
But I'm so glad they got rid of Brienne of Tarth running around in circles, because Brienne of Tarth, she's looking for the two Stark daughters. And in the book, it's set up so that she has absolutely no chance of finding them. Zero, zero, zero chance of finding them. And she's just literally, for chapters upon chapters, running around in circles just doing stuff. And you know, and what's also funny is the reader knows she has no chance of finding them. So it's just, why the fuck am I reading this? And so, like, I mean, to give you an idea of, like, kind of where I went with this, I read about, what? I've read about a third of Dance of Dragons and gave up. I almost got to the end of the frickin' 5-book giant tome series, and I'm like, you know what? Fuck it. Show's better. I'm gonna watch the show. I literally did that.
Yeah, I don't get a writer who has snow zombies talking about this isn't how it works in real life. First of all.
Well, I think the fact that he used Tolkien, it perfectly explains his influences and perfectly explains his mentality. I mean, I haven't read Lord of the Rings, but that was part of the problem I had. I picked up The Hobbit. It's fucking just like so naturalistic in the beginning. I don't care about all the goddamn different habits of hobbits. And then I watched those 20-hour long movies and I got to the end and like, fucking what happens to Elijah Wood? He goes off in like a boat with Gandalf. And then, like, I don't even remember what happens at the end. It was so bad.
All I remember was there was so much walking
Yeah.
I mean, I just did an Aziz joke there.
Well, no, that's a Clerks 2 joke, right? Where Randall's like, I'm going to impersonate. These are the Lord of the Ring movies. Lord of the Rings 1, he walks one way across the room. Lord of the Rings 2, he walks the other way. Lord of the Rings 3, he walks back. And then he mimes taking a ring off of his finger and dropping it in a volcano.
Yeah, by the way, I've never seen Clerks, so that's my original joke. I didn't steal it from Clerks. Thank you very much. But, you could condense all three of those movies into one good, I don't know, 90-minute movie if you took out all the walking scenes. Now, I actually think the books are better and are underserved by the movies, because I think the directing of the movies was more naturalistic than the books are naturalistic. He does get super naturalistic later on when he tries to get into the mythology. And you think The Hobbit is fucking naturalistic. Try to read The Silmarillion. Or is that how you pronounce it? All it is basically like a history book.
Yeah.
Don't you think Peter Jackson and George R. R. Martin's are brothers?
They do look like they came from the same troll parents. Yes.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think when we're talking about trolls, that's the perfect place to move on. It's time for Reddit on Reddit. Sony, stupid, Xbox lame, PC gaming all the way, EA Glow, Steam rocks, got Race for my firewall. These things are all on Reddit. Mostly pics of felines, comma, boring felines. These things are all on Reddit. No, we didn't post it, but we will repost it. First Reddit. The movies Lincoln and Alien have the same DVD cover design. Did you guys ever notice this before?
Yeah,
this post?
I saw this a while ago. That's pretty funny.
For anyone who hasn't seen it, it's so the profile of Lincoln looking basically page left exactly mimics the picture of the alien looking page left with the title in basically the exact same place.
And a white
same color scheme, yeah.
Same color,
black
white background.
Black and white picture with a white background. Yeah, just...
Yeah.
Lincoln. Alien.
Is the U.S. government trying to tell us something?
Yes. Yes,
Abraham,
they are.
Was Abraham Lincoln an alien?
It's to pay more taxes. Yes. Yes. Here's my thing about this. As a designer, I basically understand that there are... But only so many things you can do with a design, and there are design tropes that you go to, like profile faces, or the famous one in movie posters is actually Google between the legs movie posters. There are literally maybe thousands of posters of just a woman's legs open and then people between them on the bottom.
That's so misogynistic.
What?
Yeah.
He's talking about.
Wait, I've never seen.
No,
that.
No. You're misunderstanding what he's saying. He means you're behind her. She's standing up.
No, I had a completely different image in mind.
I know you did. That's why I clarified.
It's clear in my mind.
Yeah, and there's just her legs are open. There's just a big party happening. It's a party on your pussy, like Red Hot Chili Peppers.
So imagine if you were laying on the ground looking forward with a camera and a woman stepped over you just in frames, so you could see like the A-frame of her legs.
Right.
And then you took a shot of what's happening behind that.
Right.
That is a common movie trope poster.
It
happens all the time. Another one with women is the woman standing with a group of men, but she has her ass facing the front and she's looking over her shoulder. Literally thousands of those posters. So there are several things that you go to in the designer well and you say, I'm just going to adapt this for my purposes. And I guess someone really liked the Aliens cover, whoever the fucking Lincoln designer was.
Right. And if you go online and you Google this, there's a whole bunch of tropes like this. The blue and orange is always used in action posters, that kind of deal. So there's a whole bunch of different stuff like this.
You know, a modern one, a recently developed trope, is basically a person's face, but in light color gradients, they have different scenes from the movie going on in their face.
Yeah.
There are now hundreds of those, even though that was invented maybe 5 years ago.
Right. Now here's my question for you, Daniel, and James, you can answer this as well, even though you're not a design guy. I have two questions, actually. One, is this poor design to keep repeating these tropes? And two, does it devalue the movie to have posters that are the same as every other poster?
Is it bad design? It's lazy design. I don't know. So the other thing about this is that a movie, especially is like this, is going to get dozens of different designs. So if you look up Lincoln movie poster, there are a bunch of them. It's not just the one. And if you look up Aliens movie poster, it's a bunch of them. It's not just the one. You're just going to get different designs appropriate at different times. In this case, it might be that they designed one to be used for the DVD cover, but it was not supposed to be used, and so they had to substitute the last second. You never know. And it just so happens. Like, it's also bad that they both begin with an A. Or no. That one's just Lincoln, isn't it? Why are they together on the shelf?
Because somebody saw this and took a picture.
All right. Well, the point is, and that was the second one, devaluing? So
does it devalue the movie itself?
No, I don't think so.
I agree.
Certainly bad design can devalue the movie if it's just horrifically, horrifically bad design, because people will not pick it up. But I don't think in this case.
Yeah, but people not seeing the movie doesn't mean it's a bad movie.
Oh, yes. Sorry. Yeah, I took it a slightly different way.
Yeah, it might devalue it economically. I meant the quality of the movie.
Oh, no, absolutely not.
Right.
Absolutely not.
All right. Let's hit up the next Reddit, because I know in the pre-show, James was saying he really had a story he wanted to tell for this one.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
What's the best college dorm story you have? Parentheses, potentially NSFW. But as Daniel points out, what do you say about the podcast, Daniel?
Our podcast is not suitable for work or anywhere else. Yeah.
It's not so suitable for anywhere.
Yeah. I'll go with mine first because James is going to be better. Because I didn't have any particularly crazy dorm times. I didn't
James's
drink an undergrad.
James can only be awesome at this point if at the end he gets slapped by a punk ass.
It's true.
The same punk ass.
Yes, or he might slap a punk ass to reverse the story here. But mine involves freshman year when my roommate and I, we were good kids, so we were nominated to host, like, visiting high school students. And we got this kid, Hispanic kid, who I won't name for various reasons.
Fez?
We're supposed to host him for one night. On that first night, he went out and got blitzed, and we couldn't find him. Like, we literally lost him.
Is it because he got blitzed by Greg Hardy?
Yes, he got blitzed and then punched and then punched again by Ray Rice.
Greg Hardy.
Yes, and so we lost him. This is the age pre-sort of smartphone, by the way. So we kind of all had cell phones, but they didn't do anything for you other than make phone calls.
So you could change the case of the faces of those. That's what they did.
Yes, I didn't even have one. I was one of those
kids. The buttons, they were rubber. You could change those out too.
Yes, indeed. So we lost him, couldn't find him. He apparently went out with some frat people, went and got pancakes. He was running around campus all night. He came back, eventually crashed, and then proceeded to stay with us for an additional 2 days. Like, he wouldn't leave. Like, we were like, go home. He's like, no, I like it here. And the admissions office, when we told him about this, only gave us more meal tickets for him. Like, that's all they did. They're like, here's some more cafeteria tickets. Do you want some too for your troubles?
Yeah, because that's the they've got him at that point. He loves the school.
And then he wrote us like this really crazy handwritten letter in pencil about how such a great time he had. We're so fucking cool.
Did it acknowledge his brown privilege?
Yeah, that sounds like a safe space. That sounds like a home for him.
It was a home for him. In fact, I didn't get to sleep in my bed several nights. So, I still have that letter to this day, by the way. Anyway, that's
posted on the internet.
That's my story.
I'll just say it's not really a story. I'll always remember that in a dorm, I was walking around one time. There was a hole in the wall, and somebody had written "Sorry, sir" next to the hole in the wall. So presumably they were drunk, did that, and then needed to apologize to someone.
Worst glory hole ever.
The fact that they had to add the word "sir" is what makes it for me.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Trying to be respectful, you know. So when I was a freshman in college, I was on this, you know, a floor in this, what was supposed to be the honors dorm for all the honors students. And they were not honorable students by any stretch of the imagination. But one thing that I used to do whenever I talked to people, this is when I was first getting into philosophy, and I'd ask a very, you know, sort of a noobish philosophical question, but I thought it was pretty deep. I would ask, if you had to choose between saving the life of your mother or saving the life of three random people, which would you choose? You know, I thought this was a deep philosophical question, and people give their various answers. And this one guy, his name was Franco. He was from Singapore. He was always high, by the way, always smoking weed. I could never tell if the insane things he said were because of being high or because of not being high. This guy ran out of weed one time, and so he opened up a bag of chamomile tea, like poured the leaves out, rolled it, and like smoked it because he thought like maybe that would like have a similar effect. Because you know, it's chamomile, really... it's calming, you know.
Yeah. Got sleepy.
And so he would hear me asking
these
questions.
Sleepy was your guy, Daniel, not this guy.
That's true. Yeah.
He would hear me ask these philosophical questions, so he thought he would try his hand at philosophy, and he'd say, Jims. This was his accent. Jims, if you were in...
He was Ayn Rand?
No, he...
What?
That doesn't sound like Ayn Rand at all. Jens,
go with it. Yes,
if you were in Nam, and you were captured by the Viet Cong and they were torturing you for information, would you give it up? And at first, you know, I'm taking his question seriously. I just say like, well, you know, I've never been tortured before, but I would try to resist, you know. But I don't know, because I've never been tortured. You know, I took it seriously. I thought, oh wow, you know, someone's interested in philosophy. But then like the questions just started devolving. He would say, okay, but what if they cut your dick off? And I'm like, well, I'd probably like give up information if they threatened to do that. Like, you know, still kind of taking this seriously. He says, well, what if they made you fuck a Vietnamese hooker? And I'd be, I'm like,
wait, was that worse than cutting your dick off?
I guess it was supposed to be. I'm not sure what, I just like, what the, when he says that. And then he says, and they, and I'm like, I don't know what to say. So he like asks a different question. He's like, okay, what if they make you fuck a dog? And then while your dick is in the dog, they cut it off.
I would think once my dick was in the dog, I'd be like, no, just cut it off. I don't want it anymore.
So he would just, sometimes like just in the hallway, he'd approach me and he'd just ask me these questions. Like he'd say like, James, what if instead of a penis, all you had was a Coke bottle? And the only way to get a woman pregnant is to shake it up and open it on her. And then
that's kind of awesome, actually.
Then he.
How is it any different than what we do, though?
I don't know.
It'd be about 10 times the size, but
it blew my metaphysics, though. Is all these fucking things, and then to top it off, he puts this paper on my dorm that's a picture of a gorilla. Like he tapes that to my door, and underneath it says, James, period. Would you kill this gorilla for world peace? And then, cause one of the questions I said, like, one of the philosophical questions I asked were like, would you kill an innocent man if it led to world peace? Like that was another question I thought was like a good philosophical question to ask. And so he says, would you kill this gorilla for world peace? And I write like in Sharpie over the gorilla's face, yes. And then,
Only if the gorilla is named Ishmael.
I come up to my dorm the next day and there's a picture of an entire family of gorillas and they all have like a sad face and it says on the bottom, James, period. How could you? ? And then the next day there's another picture with like a gorilla laying on the ground with like a brick over its head. I wasn't sure what that was. And then it just said in red letters this time, James, period. How many more must die? It was just such a acid trip just listening to this guy talk and just think. Just, it was, yeah. I couldn't tell if it was because he was high all the time or he would act this way when he couldn't get high.
That's awesome.
Well, it actually transitions perfectly into our last Reddit.
Wait, I have one more. I'm sorry. It's very, very quick. I'm sorry. I've ruined your fucking transition. This is what I do. Get over it. Our freshman year, the people running for dorm room president, vice president, and treasurer, and the three who won, in fact, I wish I was fucking making this up, were last names Udick, Cox, and Butts. And by the way, that was the funniest fucking thing that ever happened to a freshman Daniel T. Richards. All I did was relentlessly mock them.
I mean, that's why they won. That's why everyone voted for them.
Yes. In fact, I ran a counter campaign with my roommate as a fake campaign called Dan Stuby, your seriously serious candidate. No, seriously. making fun of Udick, Cox, and Butts. But, yeah.
To Uranus.
Whoop, transition.
Reddit. Why do we, parentheses, conscientious people who believe in science, close parentheses, still eat meat? Oh, but it continues. Forget animal rights for a second. Okay. Forgot something that doesn't exist. The evidence.
Gone!
The evidence is clear that meat production is very bad for the environment. Is it?
Not mine.
Is it? Do we think meat is necessary for health? Do we dismiss the studies? Think it tastes too good? So, for me, this is one of these questions that you can just answer, yes.
Yeah, I don't accept any of his premises.
Right.
So, forgetting animal rights, I also forget it's quote-unquote bad for the environment. It's fucking awesome for my environment. It makes my environment way better. And all I have to do when people ask me why do you eat meat is I just jam my finger in my mouth and point to my incisors and I say, because Darwin says so! That's what I do. I have incisors for a reason. It's to tear flesh. And not the flesh of a cantaloupe. The flesh of an antelope.
Where did vegetarians and vegans get this thing that it's healthy to live a lifestyle without eating meat?
Yeah, geez.
I mean, did humans just, like, poison themselves for their entire existence? Is that the entire point? That's what they're saying about eating meat? Up until now, when we discovered veganism and vegetarianism, humans were poisoning themselves with meat.
I mean, I don't know if any of them are arguing that. They're saying that you can get by without it. And that.
Well,
and another argument they say is that it's more efficient because, you know, in order to raise an animal to eat it, you gotta feed it a bunch of plant matter. It's like, why don't you just cut out the middleman and eat the plant matter?
Can you get a plant matter prime rib? Fuck
exactly.
No.
I mean, that's like, to make a movie, you need to do all this stuff to produce the script and bring it to life. Why don't you just cut out the middleman and read the script?
Yeah,
that's
there's a lot
thing.
Of that kind of argument. It's a very silly argument. But I mean, more and more recently, vegetarians and vegans are in fact arguing that eating meat is less healthy for you than being a plant eater, which is just ridiculous on its face. Slow cooking of meat is what allowed us to evolve into a thinking, conscious, fully formed human being that we are today.
Wait, really?
Yes, go look up that study. It's fucking brilliant. Because in fact, eating raw meat, which we were before, did not further that process very much, but eating cooked meat really did, which is why the harnessing of fire was such an important dietary thing, not just for protection. So yeah, I love meat. I'm never giving it up. Vegans can go fuck themselves.
Well.
With a turnip.
I know what James learned this week. So, James, you want to go first? What did you learn this week?
I mean, I guess I learned that meat was critical to the development of the rational faculty.
That's right. Go meat!
Yeah. Well, it's definitely required for my rational faculty.
That's the thing. I
become irritable.
Yeah, exactly. Are we just addicted to meat? Is that the argument? Like, we're addicted to oil. We're addicted to meat.
I mean, I feel better if I have a meal consisting of meat rather than, you know, maybe like a pizza or something like that. Like, I always want some kind of meat on every meal I have, you know?
Yeah. But it's not a meal. For me, it's not a meal if there's no meat. It is at best a robust snack.
Yeah.
Right.
That's the one thing pizza, if you don't have meat on it, has against it. Even if it has pepperoni on it, it's really not enough meat.
I love the, everyday sort of common sense philosophy of Adam Carolla. Can't get by an episode without hearing an Adam Carolla story. But he goes, I will prove to you that we are meant to eat meat. And then he lists off a list of barbecue, like slow roast brisket with sultry sausage sizzling on the pan. And he's like, your mouth watering? All right. Now let's list vegetables. Turnips. Celery. Potatoes.
You're just addicted to big meat, Daniel.
He's like, no one's fucking salivating.
You're just addicted to big meat.
Wait a minute. Elliot's not here.
I know. That joke would have played better with Elliot. But what did you learn this week, Daniel?
I learned that Peyton Head is the greatest troll child of all time. For many reasons. Also, it is racist to exist, which I've learned every week.
Yeah.
What did you learn this week?
I learned another dimension to the punk-ass story that I didn't realize the reason he slapped was because he saw the knife. I thought he just slapped because he was a punk-ass, but apparently he got scared, which I'm not sure if that makes me like him better or not.
Well, hopefully after this episode you like us better, and you will find us on the Facebook.com/midside and on the Twitters/@themidside. And on Patreon.com, we love our Patreon subscribers who sign up to give us money per episode, a few shekels here and there, and it helps us keep the lights on, helps us provide you this service that we do once a week, you know, aside from our jobs. But it's not really a job for us. It's really a lifestyle.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So, yeah, tell a friend. That really helps. And I mean it. I mean, legitimately, you're going home for the holidays pretty soon. Sit down, play this with your mother and father. You know, maybe skip the parts about combing in the hair or whatever it is. Like, but, you know, tell them. Tell a friend. Tell an enemy. Tell Don Rickles.
You know, seriously, tell them. Even tell your parents. Because if they don't laugh at this episode, and if our laughter at the beginning of this episode is not contagious, fuck them. You don't want to go home for the holidays anyway.
Right.
Exactly. So yeah, thanks very much. Thanks for Liberty.me listeners. Subscribe on iTunes, 5-star rating, and we'll see you next week.
I'm Justin M. Wisniewski, and I hope you learned something this week. This concludes your journey into the midside. Good luck out there, and remember, if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a day. The news, you still have the dorm room story in here. Are we still doing the dorm room story?
No, I forgot to delete it.
Okay.
I forgot
to delete really?
It. Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, my God. I had such a good dorm room story set up.
Oh, sorry. We are doing the Reddit dorm room question.
Oh, there you're not doing the, like, you know, the
adult dorms,
adult
which are
dorm.
You know, also called apartments.
Nice.
Well, it's like, I don't know. I found that interesting.
I think it's interesting, but we're gonna do Starbucks hates Christians instead.
Okay, I didn't get a shit. I didn't get a chance to read that.
There's
no article. I just put Starbucks hates Christmas ? Basically, they did red and green cups, and people are like, "That's not Christmassy enough," which is retarded.
All right. Well,
how dare you use the colors of Christmas to make people not think of Christmas?
Yeah.
All right.
Exactly. Okay.
Are we ready?
Very ready.
Let's go. Okay.
I'm laughing at you saying let's go like that.
Because that's what we do. That's the end of the song.
I know, that's why it's funny.
Except that I'm a tenor He's not.
That's why it's funny, because I'm picturing the voice coming out of the singer's head. That chain reaction would just be really funny.
Ooh. All right, take a breather there.